All right, so let's dive into this case that really kind of throws a wrench into what we think we know about legal strategy. Imagine like you're in this murder trial, right? The stakes are super high, and this piece of hearsay evidence pops up that could totally tank the defendant's case. The defense attorney, who just a minute ago was fighting tooth and nail against the same evidence, suddenly just goes silent. No objection, no argument, nothing. What gives?
Yeah, it's a real head scratcher.
It is. And that's the mystery we're going to unpack today in Thompson v. State of Texas. This case, what really makes us think about how tricky these ineffective assistance of counsel claims can be.
Right. This isn't just about one lawyer's actions in one trial. It really digs into some big questions about fairness in the system, the right to due process, and how we, as legal pros, are supposed to figure out what a lawyer was thinking when it's not totally clear.
Yeah, like peeling back the layers of a legal onion, right? To even start to see the dilemma, we've got to lay out the facts of the case. So we've got Marcus Thompson, he's on trial for murder. During the trial, the prosecution tries to bring in testimony from a police officer, Sergeant Yanchak, about what witnesses said when they identified someone from a photo lineup. The problem is, the witnesses themselves aren't there in court to testify, so what they said is hearsay.
Right. And hearsay, as you know, it's generally inadmissible, and it could have really hurt Thompson's defense.
For sure. So here's where things get interesting. Thompson's attorney knows this hearsay could be really damaging, so he objects. Not once, but twice. And he's successful. The judge blocks the testimony, but then the prosecutor just kind of rephrases the question a little bit, and the
Yeah.
defense attorney doesn't say a word. The hearsay ends up being admitted as evidence, and Thompson is convicted. 20 years.
Yeah. Makes you wonder, was the attorney just taking a calculated risk, maybe a strategy we don't have enough info to understand? Or was it a huge mistake, like incompetent representation that messed up Thompson's chance at a fair trial?
Exactly. So how do we even figure that out?
Well, there's this legal framework for evaluating ineffective assistance claims called the Strickland test. It's a two-part test, and it sets a pretty high bar. First, the defendant has to prove that their lawyer's performance was below what a reasonable, competent attorney would do. Basically, they have to show their lawyer messed up big time. Then, the second part, they got to prove that the mistake actually prejudiced the outcome of their case. Like, did the mistake likely change the verdict?
So it's not enough to just say, my lawyer messed up. You have to show how that mistake actually affected the result, right?
Exactly.
But here's the thing, and this is something every law student should remember. The courts generally assume that lawyers know what they're doing, that they're acting competently and strategically, even if we can't see why right away. It's on the defendant to prove otherwise.
It is. Think of it like a puzzle where we only have a few pieces. In this case, the trial record doesn't really explain why the attorney didn't object that third time.
So, what did the Texas Court of Criminal Appeals make of all this?
Well, the majority opinion, written by Judge Mansfield, ended up siding with the state. They reversed the lower court's decision, which had been in favor of Thompson.
Wow, so they basically said the lawyer's silence was okay.
Their thinking was that just because the record is silent doesn't automatically mean the lawyer was incompetent. They pointed out that the defense attorney fought hard on other parts of the case, and they said maybe choosing not to object that third time was strategic.
I see. Like, maybe the attorney thought objecting again and again would annoy the jury and make Thompson look bad. Or maybe there was some clever tactic we just don't know about.
Right, exactly. The majority emphasized that without any evidence that the lawyer messed up, they couldn't assume there was a mistake. They basically said even a big mistake, if it's just one thing in an otherwise good defense, isn't enough to prove ineffective assistance.
So they're saying, look, if Thompson wants to go after his lawyer, he needs to show more than just this one weird silence. He needs to dig deeper, maybe through habeas corpus, to find proof of what his lawyer was thinking at the time.
Yep, that's pretty much it. And that brings up a really important question about fairness in the system.
Yeah, because habeas corpus petitions, those are super complicated, time-consuming, and they often need a lot of resources that a lot of defendants just don't have, especially if they can't afford a private attorney.
Right.
So, are they just stuck with maybe bad legal help just because the trial record isn't good enough to help them win an appeal?
It's a tough situation, for sure. And that's exactly what the dissenting judges in this case focused on. They disagreed strongly with the majority. They said the lawyer's earlier objections showed he clearly understood the hearsay rule and how bad it could be for his client. They couldn't think of any good reason why he'd let that testimony slide after fighting so hard against it before.
Interesting. So, where do we go from here? We've got this tension between procedural safeguards, which the majority emphasized, and ensuring a fair trial, which the dissent championed. It feels like strictly sticking to procedure, while important, might sometimes come at the cost of true justice,
okay,
right? Especially for folks who are already at a disadvantage in the system.
Yeah, that's a great point. And it's something we'll continue to explore as we dive deeper into the implications of this case. Yeah, no, you've hit on something really important there, you know, this tension between wanting to follow the rules, but also make sure things are fair, especially for people who might not have all the resources to navigate this complex system. It's a tough balance.
It really is. And it makes me think about, well, what does this mean for us, you know, as future lawyers? How do we balance these competing ideas in our own practice?
It's something every lawyer deals with. In cases like Thompson, they offer valuable lessons, you know. One of the biggest takeaways, at least for me, is how important it is to have a good, well-documented trial record. Every single decision, every objection, even those times when you choose to stay silent, they should all be written down and explained clearly.
Makes sense. If everyone knows your reasoning, there's less room for confusion later on. Right?
Exactly. It's like creating a roadmap of your thought process, you know? It shows that your actions, even if they seem a bit unusual, were done on purpose and you knew what you were doing. This protects you as an attorney, but it also helps your client because it gives them something solid to work with if they need to appeal later.
So documentation, that's key. But what about the decisions themselves? Like, how do we deal with the gray areas of legal strategy? Those situations where the right answer isn't so obvious?
Well, that's where experience comes in and good judgment. But even for experienced attorneys, cases like Thompson remind us that we need to keep thinking critically about what we do. We have to ask ourselves, am I really doing the best for my client? Are my actions strategic, or am I just going through the motions?
So it's not enough to just go with your gut. You have to have good reasons and a solid understanding of the law and how it might affect your client.
Absolutely. That's why I find it so helpful to use hypothetical scenarios. They let us explore the trickier parts of legal doctrine and test our assumptions in a safe space, you know, without real-world consequences.
I like that. It's like a thought experiment for lawyers, right? Okay, so let's play what if for a minute. Let's say the attorney in Thompson had objected to that hearsay, not twice, but like 10 times. Would that have changed the majority's decision? Like, when does not objecting stop looking like strategy and start looking like incompetence?
That's a great question. The majority's reasoning was based on the idea that the attorney's silence was intentional. But if we imagine all those missed objections, well, that explanation starts to fall apart. It gets a lot harder to say that kind of behavior was anything but a really bad decision or a lack of understanding of basic legal stuff.
Yeah, it's like you're making the warning signs louder and louder. At some point, you can't ignore them, right?
Yeah.
I wonder how the court would have weighed those things against each other, the idea that the lawyer is competent versus all those repeated, unexplainable mistakes.
That's interesting. And it leads to another what-if scenario. What if instead of a silent record, we had a transcript where the defense attorney actually said why he wasn't objecting? Like, imagine he said, "Your Honor, I'm choosing not to object because I think this testimony, even though it's technically hearsay, will actually help my client by showing how the witness's stories don't match up."
Whoa. That changes everything. Now the court doesn't have to guess what the attorney was thinking. They have something concrete to look at to decide if the strategy, even if it's unusual, was reasonable under the circumstances.
Exactly. The court might still disagree with the strategy. Maybe they think it's unreasonable or that it'll hurt the client in the end, but at least they have something solid to base their decision on.
It really shows how important it is to communicate clearly in legal practice. If you're going to do something different, make sure everyone knows why.
Couldn't agree more. Being transparent is so important, especially when you're dealing with complicated legal situations.
Okay, last hypothetical. What if, in Thompson, we found out that the defense attorney wasn't just quiet during that hearsay testimony, but he was also falling asleep during the trial, showing up late all the time, and clearly hadn't prepared properly?
Oh, okay. Well, now we're not talking about one decision anymore, are we? Now we're talking about a pattern of behavior that makes you seriously question the attorney's competence, right? It's more than just a possible strategic mistake. It suggests they're failing to do the basic things a lawyer should be doing.
Even the majority in Thompson said that one mistake, without more evidence, isn't enough to prove ineffective assistance. But a whole bunch of errors like that paints a very different picture, doesn't it?
It does. It almost feels like the burden of proof flips. Now it's less about the defendant proving their lawyer messed up and more about the state needing to explain how this behavior could possibly be considered competent.
Yeah. It reminds us that rules are important, but they shouldn't protect a clearly bad lawyer from being called out. The goal is to have a fair trial, and that means both following the rules and knowing when those rules might be getting in the way of justice.
Exactly. We need to be careful and make sure that technicalities don't overshadow the right to have a good lawyer.
You know, it's amazing how one case like Thompson v. State of Texas can spark so much discussion.
It really does. It shows just how much there is to being a lawyer. You know, it's not just about knowing the rules. It's about how those rules actually play out in real life, the gray areas, the ethics, and how all of it can impact our clients.
Yeah, for sure. As we wrap up our deep dive into this case, I want to leave our listeners with something to think about, you know, something they can keep in mind as they go through law school and get ready for their careers.
I like that little legal cliffhanger.
Exactly. So we've talked about the trial record, the challenges of proving ineffective assistance, and this constant back and forth between sticking to procedure and making sure things are fair. But what about the big picture? What kind of lasting impact do cases like Thompson have?
Ooh, that's a great question. I think Thompson represents a debate that's happening right now in the legal world. Should we rethink the standards for proving ineffective assistance, especially on direct appeal?
You're talking about the dissent's argument that the way things are now, with habeas corpus being so important, puts defendants who can't afford a lawyer at a real disadvantage, right?
Right. They often don't have the money to go through those complicated appeals. It makes you wonder, is it really fair that your ability to challenge your lawyer depends on how much money you have? Should we be trying to make the system more equal, even if it means changing some long-standing rules?
It's a tough question, for sure. Some people say that making it easier to claim ineffective assistance would lead to a ton of pointless appeals, which would overwhelm the courts and maybe even undermine the idea that judgments should be final.
And others would say the current system cares more about efficiency than true fairness, so people who had really bad lawyers might be stuck with wrongful convictions just because they couldn't afford to navigate habeas corpus.
It seems like we're always trying to find that middle ground, a balance between a system that works well and one that's just. And that's not just for ineffective assistance cases. It's something we see throughout the legal system.
You're absolutely right. Thompson v. State of Texas is like a small example of a much bigger conversation about how law changes over time. It's about the push and pull between what's been done before and what needs to change, between protecting procedure and making sure the scales of justice are balanced.
This has been such a great conversation, really eye-opening. It reminds us that law is always evolving. It's not just a set of rules written in stone. It's constantly being tested, challenged, and reshaped as we face new situations and our values change.
And you, as future lawyers, you're going to be a part of that. You'll use what you've learned, your skills, and your passion for justice to shape the law, to make the world a fairer and more equal place.
So to all our listeners out there, don't stop thinking critically, keep asking those hard questions, and hold on to that passion for justice. The world needs lawyers who are dedicated and thoughtful. And Thompson v. State of Texas is a perfect example of the kinds of cases that will challenge you to think deeply about how our legal system works and how you can play a role in shaping its future.
I love that. That's a great way to put it. Until next time, keep those legal minds sharp and never be afraid to question, explore, and push the boundaries of the law.
Thanks for joining us on The Deep Dive. We'll see you next time.